Chapter 18 Mirrors. As I read this idle tale, I looked at Jonas from time to time, but I never saw the least flicker of expression on his face, though he did not sleep. When it was complete, I said, "I'm not certain I understand why the student at once assumed his son was dead when he saw the black sails. The ship the ogre sent had black sails, but it came only once a year and had already come." "I know," Jonas said. His voice held a flatness I had not heard before. "Do you mean you know the answers to those questions?" He did not reply, and for a time we sat in silence. I with the brown book, so insistently evocative of Thecla and the evenings we had shared, still held open by a forefinger. He with his back to the cold wall of the prison room, and his hands, one of metal, one of flesh, lying to either side, as though he had forgotten them. At last, a small voice ventured to say, "That must be a really old story." It was the little girl who had lifted the ceiling tile for me. I was so concerned for Jonas that for a moment I was angry at her for interrupting us. But Jonas muttered, "Yes, it is a very old story. And the hero had told the king, his father, that if he failed, he would return to Athens with black sails." I am not sure what that remark meant, and it may have been delirium, but since it was almost the last thing I heard Jonas say, I feel I should record it here, as I have transcribed the wonder tale that prompted it. For a time, both the girl and I endeavored to persuade him to speak again. He would not, and at last we desisted. I spent the remainder of the day sitting beside him, and after a watch or so, Hedor, whose small store of wit, as I supposed, had soon been exhausted by the prisoners, came to join us. I had a word with Lomer and Nicarete, and they arranged that his sleeping place should be on the opposite side of the room. Whatever we may say, all of us suffer from disturbed sleep at times. Some in truth hardly sleep, though some who sleep copiously swear that they do not. Some are disquieted by incessant dreams, and a fortunate few are visited often by dreams of delightful character. Some will say they were at one time troubled in sleeping, but have recovered from it, as though awareness were a disease, as perhaps it is. My own case is that I usually sleep without memorable dreams, though I sometimes have them, as the reader who has gone this far with me will know, and seldom wake before morning. But on this night, my sleep was so different from its usual nature that I have sometimes wondered if it should be called sleep at all. Perhaps it was some other state posing as sleep, as Alzabos, when they have eaten of men, pose as men. If it was the result of natural causes, I attribute it to a combination of unfortunate circumstances. I, who had all my life been accustomed to hard work and violent exercise, had for that day been confined without either. The tale from the brown book had affected my imagination, which was still more stimulated by the book itself and its associations with Thecla, and by the knowledge that I was now within the walls of the House Absolute itself, of which I had heard her speak so often. Possibly most important, my thoughts were oppressed by worry for Jonas, and by the feeling, which had been growing on me all day, that this place was the end of my journey, that I would never reach Thrax, that I would never rejoin poor Dorcas, that I would never restore the claw or even rid myself of it, that in fact the Increate, whom the owner of the claw had served, had decreed that I, who had seen so many prisoners die, should end my own life as one. I slept, if it may be called sleep, only for a moment. I had the sensation of falling, a spasm, the instinctive stiffening of a victim cast from a high window wrenched all my limbs. When I sat up, I could see nothing but darkness. I heard Jonas's breathing, and my fingers told me he was still sitting as I had left him, his back propped by the wall. I lay down and slept again. Or rather, I tried to sleep, and passed into that vague state that is neither sleeping nor waking. At other times I have found it pleasant, but it was not so now. I was conscious of the need for sleep, and conscious that I was not sleeping. Yet I was not conscious in the usual meaning of that term. I heard faint voices in the innyard, and felt somehow that soon the bells of the campanile would chime, and it would be day. My limbs jerked again, and I sat up. For a moment I imagined I had seen a flash of green fire, but there was nothing. I had covered myself with my cloak. I threw it off, and in the instant it took to do so, remembered that I was in the antechamber of the House Absolute, and that I had left the Inn of Saltus far behind. Though Jonas lay beside me still, on his back, his good hand behind his head. The pale blur I saw was the white of his right eye, though the sighing of his breath was that of one who slept. I was still too much asleep myself to wish to talk, and I had a presentiment that he would not answer me in any case. Lying down again, I surrendered myself to my irritation at being unable to sleep. I thought of the herd driven through Saltus and counted them from memory. 137. Then there were the soldiers who had come singing up from Guile. The innkeeper had asked me how many there were, and I had guessed at a figure, but I had never counted them until now. He might, or might not, have been a spy. Master Palaemon, who had taught us so much, had never taught us how to sleep. No apprentice had ever needed to learn that, after a day of errands and scrubbing and kitchen work. We had rioted each night for half a watch in our quarters, then slept like the citizens of the necropolis, until he came to wake us to polishing floors and emptying slops. There is a rack of knives over the table where Brother Abert slices meat. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 knives, all with plainer blades than Master Gerloz's. One with a rivet missing from its handle. One with a handle a little burned because Brother Abert had once laid it on the stove. I was wide awake again, or thought I was, and did not know why. Beside me, Draught slumbered undisturbed. I closed my eyes once more and tried to sleep as he did. 390 steps from the ground to our dormitory. How many more to the room where the guns throbbed at the top of the tower? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 guns. 1, 2, 3 levels of cells in use in the oubliette. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 wings on each level. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14, 15, 16, 17 cells in each wing. 1, 2, 3 bars on the little window of my cell's door. I woke with a start and a sensation of cold, but the sound that had disturbed me was only the slamming of one of the hatches far down the corridor. Beside me, my boy lover, Severian, lay in the easy sleep of youth. I sat up thinking I would light my candle and look for a moment at the fresh coloring of that chiseled face. Each time he returned to me, he carried a speck of freedom glowing on that face. Each time I took it and blew upon it and held it to my breast, and each time it pined and died, yet sometimes it would not. And then instead of sinking deeper under this load of earth and metal, I would rise through metal and earth to the wind and the sky. Or so I told myself. If it was not true, still the only joy remaining to me was to gather in that speck. but when I groped for the candle it was gone. And my eyes and my ears and the very skin of my face told me that my cell itself had vanished with it. There was dim light here, very dim, but not the light from the candle of the torturer in the corridor, the light that filtered through the three bars of my cell's hatch. Faint echoes proclaimed that I was in an area larger than 100 such cells. My cheeks and forehead, which had worn themselves away in signaling the nearness of my walls, confirmed it. I stood and smoothed my gown, and began to walk almost as a somnambulist might. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 strides. Then the odor of close-kept bodies and confined air told me where I was. It was the antechamber. I felt a wrench of dislocation. Had the autarch ordered me carried here while I slept? Would the others spare their lashes when they saw me? The door. The door! My confusion was so great I nearly fell, borne down by the jumble of my mind. I wrung my hands, but the hands I wrung were not my own. My right hand felt a hand too large and too strong, and at the same instant my left hand felt a similar hand. Thekla fell for me like a dream, or I should say dwindled to nothing and, in dwindling, vanished within me until I was myself again and nearly alone. Yet I had caught it. The location of the door, the secret door through which the young exultants came by night with their energized lashes of braided wire, was still in my memory. With everything else I have seen or thought, I could escape tomorrow. Or now.
Please,
a voice beside me said.
Where did the lady go?
It was the child again, the little girl with the dark hair and the staring eyes. I asked her if she had seen a woman. She took my hand in her own tiny one.
Yes, a tall lady, and I'm scared. There's a horrible thing in the dark. Did it find her?
You're not afraid of horrible things, remember? You laughed at the green face.
This is different. A black thing that snuffles in the dark.
There was real terror in her voice, and the hand that held mine shook. What did the lady look like?
I don't know. I could only see her because she was darker than the shadows, but I could tell she was a lady by the way she walked. When I came to see who it was, there was nobody here but you.
I understand, I told her, though I doubt that you ever will. Now you must return to your mother and go to sleep.
It's coming along the wall, she said.
Then she released my hand and vanished. But I am sure she did not do as I told her. Instead, she must have followed Jonas and me, for I have glimpsed her twice since I returned here to the House Absolute, where no doubt she exists on stolen food. It is possible she used to return to the antechamber to eat. But I have ordered that all the people confined there are to be freed, even if it is necessary, and I think it will be, to drive most of them forth at Pike Point. I have also ordered that Nicaretta be brought to me. And when I was writing of our capture a moment ago, my chamberlain entered to say she waited my pleasure. Jonas lay as I had left him, and again I saw the whites of his eyes in the dark. You said it was necessary to go, if you were to remain sane. I told him. Come. The sender of the nodules, whoever that may be, has laid his hands upon another weapon. I have found the way out, and we are going now. He did not move. And at last, I had to take him by the arm and lift him up. Many of those parts of him that were metal must have been forged from those white alloys that deceive the hand by their lightness. for it was like lifting a boy. But the metal parts, and his flesh as well, had been wetted with some thin slime. My foot found the same filthy dampness on the floor nearby, and on the wall itself. Whatever it was the child had warned me of had come and gone while I spoke with her, and it had not been for Jonas that it had searched. The door, by which the tormentors entered, was not far from our sleeping place, in the center of the rearmost wall of the antechamber. It was unlocked by a word of power, as such ancient things almost always are. I whispered, and we passed through the hidden portal and left it standing open, poor Jonas striding beside me like a thing wholly metal. A narrow stairway, festooned with the webs of pale spiders and carpeted with dust, led by circuitous turnings downward. That much I recalled, but beyond the stair I could remember nothing. Whatever might come, the stale air tasted of freedom, so that merely to breathe it was pleasure. Worried though I was, I could have laughed aloud. Secret doors opened at many landings, but there seemed a chance, and more than a chance, that we might encounter someone as soon as we entered one, and the stairs seemed deserted. Before I was seen by any resident of the House Absolute, I wished to be as far from the antechamber as possible. We had descended perhaps 100 steps, when we reached a door painted with a crimson teratoid sign that appeared to me to be a glyph from some tongue beyond the shores of Earth. At that moment, I heard a tread upon the stair. There was neither knob nor latch, but I threw myself against the door, and after an initial resistance, it flew open. Jonas followed me. It shut behind us so quickly that it seemed it should have made a great noise, though there was none. The chamber beyond the door was dim, but the light grew brighter when he had entered. After I had made certain there was no one present but ourselves, I made use of this light to examine him. His face was still fixed, as it had been when he sat with the wall of the antechamber at his back. Yet it was not the lifeless thing I had feared. It was the face, almost, of a man about to wake, and tears had left moist furrows down his cheeks. "Do you know me?" I asked, and he nodded without speaking. "Jonas, I must recover Terminus Est if I can. I've run like any coward, but now that I've had a chance to think, I see I must go back for her. My letter to the Archon of Thrax is in her scabbard pocket, and I couldn't bear to part with her anyway. But if you want to try to escape this place, I'll understand. You're not bound to me." He did not appear to have heard. "I know where we are," he said, and raised one arm stiffly to point toward something I had taken to be a folding screen. I was delighted to hear his voice, and largely in the hope that he would speak again, I asked, "Where are we then?" "On Earth," he answered, and strode across the room to the folded panels. Their backs were set with clustered diamonds, as I now saw, and enameled with such twisted signs as had been on the door. Yet these signs were no stranger than the actions of my friend Jonas when he threw the panels open. The rigidity I had remarked in him only a moment before was gone, yet he had not returned to his old self. It was then that I knew. We have all watched someone who has lost one hand, as he had, and replaced it with a hook or some other artificial contrivance, perform some task that involves both his real hand and the artificial one. So it was with Jonas when I watched him pull back the panels, but the prosthetic hand was the hand of flesh. When I understood that, I understood what he had said much earlier, that in the wreck of his ship his face had been destroyed. I said, "The eyes. They could not replace your eyes, is that right? And so they gave you that face. Was he killed too?" He looked about at me in a way that told me he had forgotten I was present. "He was on the ground," he said, We killed him by accident, coming in. I needed his eyes and larynx. And I took some other parts.
That was why you were able to tolerate me. A torturer. You are a machine.
You are no worse than the rest of your kind. Remember that for years before I met you, I had become one of you. Now, I am worse than you. You would not have left me, but I am leaving you. Now I have the chance, and it is the chance I sought for years as I went up and down the seven continents of this world, seeking the Hyra jewels and tinkering with clumsy mechanisms. I thought of all that had happened since I had carried the knife to Thecla, and though I did not follow everything he had said, I told him, "If it is your only chance, then go, and good luck. If I ever see Jolenta, I will tell her you once loved her, and nothing more." Jonas shook his head. "Don't you understand? I will come back for her when I have been repaired, when I am sane and whole." Then he stepped into the circle of panels, and a brilliant light kindled in the air above his head.
How foolish to call them mirrors. They are to mirrors, as the enveloping firmament is to a child's balloon. They reflect light, indeed, but that, I think, is no part of their true function. They reflect reality, the metaphysical substance that underlies the material world. Jonas closed the circle and moved to its center. For perhaps the time of the briefest prayer, something of wires and flashing, metallic dust danced above the tops of the panels before all was gone and I was alone.